If you'll turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4, we'll begin our study there. At the end of chapter 12 is the introduction to chapter 13. Earnestly desire the greater gifts, and I'll show you a still more excellent way. A more excellent way, even than the ability to speak in tongues or work miracles or prophesy, any of those kind of gifts. And you know that in chapter 13, that more excellent way is love. And he shows it's more excellent in the first three verses by what happens if you do not have it. You have that phrase in verse 1. 2 and 3. If you do not have love, what happens? Then, beginning in verse 4, he shows why it's more excellent because of how it makes us think about and treat one another. And that's where we're looking at tonight. The love of which he speaks is not emotional love. It's not romantic love. It's the kind of love that's in the commandment that we're studying. Love your neighbor as yourself. It's a love of esteem, a love that cares for, values someone, and treats them accordingly. And so he says here in verse 4 that in this version, love is patient. If you had the King James Version or the American Standard Version or the New King James Version, instead of the word patient, how do they translate it? Long suffering. I really like that translation. There's two words for patient in the New Testament. One of them has to do with enduring trying circumstances. That's never used of God. One of them has to do with enduring trying people. That's this word. And so, you suffer at the hands of others because they hurt you. Maybe they say things they shouldn't. Maybe they ignore you. Various things that happen in interactions. And this would be true in the Corinthian situation, where you might have a tongue speaker, for example, that was boastful about his gift, or chose to use his gift in the assembly when he shouldn't, chapter 14. So love is long-suffering. When people don't act like they should and don't treat you like they should. Now, I ask you the question. Throughout this section, there are couplets. Not every time, but several of these words are paired together in thought. That's true with the first two words. Love is long-suffering. And then love is kind, patient and kind. You can see the connection of those when you think about the fact it's not hard to be patient when people treat you well. It's hard to be patient when you're suffering because of the way people treat you. That's when your kindness is tested. Love is patient. Love is kind. Now, our focus in our study is on the second part of that great commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself, as you love yourself. And so, as yourself is a measure in that manner, I mean. It's a manner in that way that you love yourself. So, what does this say about how we're to look upon and treat ourselves? What does that demand? What?
Be patient with ourselves.
Be patient with ourselves. So, there are times we may do things that we're very disappointed in ourselves and what we did or how we did it. And while there's room, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later, for certainly self-examination and self-reproof, there's also, out of love and respect and care for self, the need to have some degree of patience with self. And sometimes when we're so disappointed with ourselves, we may speak harshly and critically about self. In other words, no kindness. Cut ourselves no slack. I'm not talking about covering up sin. I'm not talking about ignoring guilt. The fact is, we just fumble to the ball sometimes. We don't always treat people. We don't always act like we should. So we can either get down on ourselves and be harshly critical and cut ourselves no slack, or we can be patient and kind. Now, if I can't cut myself any slack, if I can't be patient with myself when I mess up, how's that going to impact that second greatest commandment? That's right. It's going to impact my ability to be patient with that person or that person who mistreated me. If I can't be kind to myself in times like that, how in the world can I then be kind to them? And so in the interaction of people in a congregation like the church at Corinth, not everybody's going to always say the right things, be as attentive as they ought to, be as considerate as they ought to. That was certainly true of this congregation. But love demands, and it's not like them, it's not about our liking them, it's a matter of caring about them, esteeming them, honoring them. Love is long-suffering and kind and demands the same thing of ourselves. Now, if I can't do that, it can lead to depression, it can lead to despondency, it can even lead to suicide, because I just have no patience with my failures. And so this is something we need to learn. Love is patient, love is kind, and it demands it of self as well. Look at Ephesians chapter 4, verse 2. Sir? Sometimes it does require a lot of talking to yourself. That's a good point, Ennis. That's right. You know, when you talk about being patient with someone else, when you're suffering, does that mean you're just winking your eyes and say, oh, it's okay? Is that it? You can mistreat me, it's okay? Is that it?
No.
Doesn't mean that. You just recognize, you know, when this person thinks, or if it's brought to their attention, they're sorry. The same thing is true with self. It's not saying it's okay. It's just recognizing we have weaknesses. We mess up sometimes. That's just the way it is, living in the world in which we live. All right, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 2, and Colossians 3, verse 12 and 13. I put these two together with the question. So if you want to open your finger to Colossians as well and hold it to both passages, Colossians 3, 12 and 13, in both of these, you have the idea of patience. And so, in Colossians 3:12, it's the last word in the verse. In Ephesians 4:3, right in the middle of the verse. My question is, in each passage, very similar, what follows the word patience? What's the fruit of it? What?
What's the? With one
all right, bearing. Look at Colossians first. He said, with patience, the last word in verse 12, and then bearing with one another and forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone. You mean brethren might have reason to have a complaint against a brother? Oh, yes. Yes. But aren't they supposed to be a Christian? They are. But we're the products of our culture. We're the products of our society. We have growing to do. We may not always do right, but have patience, bearing with, and forgiving. When you actually have a complaint against somebody, and in the Ephesians passage, you have the word patience, and what follows it there?
Showing tolerance
for one another in love. So in both passages, the idea of patience, the fruit of it, following patience, is tolerance, bearing with one another, recognizing people don't always conduct themselves like they ought. And so, if a person, like this next question I have, what would be the consequences in the relationship between brethren when this is lacking?
Tumultuous.
What?
It'll be tumultuous.
That's right. Be tumultuous. In chapter 4, verse 3, he said, showing tolerance for one another in love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. In peace. And so, in the Colossian letter, he said, beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. And so a lack of this results is, like Alex's word, tumult. Well, now, love your neighbor as yourself. So if I can't show patience toward myself, what's going to happen relative to how I feel about myself? There's going to be unrest, tumult, instead of peace. And so, this is for our good. Love your neighbor as yourself. And the lack of patience with our neighbor and with self interrupts that peace that God wants us to have. Any questions, comments? All right, look at 2 Timothy in chapter 4. Second Timothy, this is to a preacher, Timothy, verse 2. Our question on the lesson is, what was Timothy to do with great patience, or the King James, New King James says, with all long suffering? What was he to do?
Reprove, rebuke,
exhort. Reprove. The word reprove means to show people in what way their lives are wrong. The word rebuke has to do with charging them, exhorting them to change, to quit doing the things they ought not do, to begin doing the things they ought to do. And the word exhort has to do with encouragement. So here's three things: reprove, rebuke, exhort. But you know what he couples it with great patience. Why would Timothy need great patience?
Because people don't like to be reproved.
That's right. Sometimes we don't pick up too quick, sometimes, do we? We don't like rebuke. And we're maybe resistant to change. And so what is Timothy to do? Just give up? Get mad? Get harsh? No, you just keep reproving and rebuking and exhorting with great patience and instruction. You just keep teaching, Timothy. All right, so if that's the case, we ask the question here, in practical application, how would this affect Timothy in working with people? We just dealt with that. That he wouldn't give up instead and lose his temper, that he'd just continue to do his work. And so, I have on your lesson 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 14, and just hold your finger at 2 Timothy, we'll come right back to it. Look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 14. We urge you, brethren. Now, this is probably with focus on the elders that he talked about in the previous two verses. Admonish the unruly. Encourage the faint-hearted. Help the weak. Look at that last exhortation. In order for men to do that kind of work, they're going to have to be patient with everyone. So you're going to have people with different dispositions, different characters. Some maybe test the waters. They're unruly. Some just get discouraged easy. Some are just weak, weak in knowledge, weak in faith. What do? You're patient. You're long-suffering. So, if we come back and apply that to ourselves, we ask this question on the lesson, apply what patience demanded in these texts to our dealing with others to what it demands in dealing with self. You ever disappointed in the fact that you haven't made the changes in character you hope to make? You ever disappointed that in the things that you've studied and learned, sometimes you say, man, I need to go back and revisit that. It's just not being practiced in my heart and life. Now you can get discouraged and quit, or you can, with great patience, just keep on reproving yourself and rebuking yourself and exhorting yourself. Why? Why would you do that? Why would you do it? Why would Timothy do it to one of the fellow Christians?
Love.
Love your neighbor as you love yourself. And so, if you feel like you're just out of the loop because you don't have everything wired and you just got to keep teaching yourself and keep reminding yourself, what's new? Be patient with yourself and keep working to be the kind of person God wants you to be. All right, Hebrews chapter 6. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 6. If you did the lesson, you might have found this one, this particular question. At first, kind of, I don't know if unsettling is the word, but it's a little different than what we normally think of when we think of being patient. With whom was Abraham patient? With God. Isn't that interesting? Look at the text. When God made the promise to Abraham, since he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply you. And so, having patiently waited, how old was Abraham when he left Haran? 75. How old was he when Isaac was born? All right, about 100 years old. How old was he when all the land of Canaan was given to him?
Never.
Never. Not that God's promise failed. It was given to his descendants. But Hebrews chapter 11 says Abraham was looking for what? Looking for a city. The builder and maker is God. But as far as the land promises themselves, they weren't fulfilled immediately. And so we may become impatient with people and they've not done anything wrong. They just haven't met our calendar. They haven't done what we want them to do when we want them to do it. And people do become impatient with God in that way. Pray for something. If God doesn't do it tomorrow, what's wrong with God anyway? Doesn't he hear me? Doesn't he care? And so patience with God and with maybe other righteous people may simply involve the recognition that they don't do things on our calendar, like when we want it done. Love your neighbor as yourself. So what does patience tell you about yourself? You may want changes immediately. You may want yourself to do better immediately. But it may not work that way. It may take time. It may take years. Be patient with yourself. You know, in the Hebrews letter, chapter 5, he said, because of the time you ought to be teachers. We're likened when we become new Christians to newborn babes. It takes time to grow. Yes, sir, Ennis?
As we're talking about these points, I keep thinking about the times when I've talked with people trying to explain to them about the church. And, you know, they seem like they're honest and sincere, but yet it's difficult sometimes because the emotions are involved there. And you know, that they've not catch on to it. And it requires some patience to deal with those people that you won't see it.
Yes, we do. And you can get, as a teacher, as Ennis is pointing out, you may get impatient with people. Tell you what helps with that, with me at least. I understand that. And then I think, I wonder how many times Jesus Christ said, Steve, you dummy, don't you get it? You've been reading the Bible, you're 74 years old, don't you get it? Or will be tomorrow, if I live. Don't you get it, man? He taught the apostles during his ministry. He's about to go to the cross, and they still don't get it. What do you do? Say, get out of here. I'm through with you. I'm going to get a new group. No. He patiently kept teaching, kept rebuking, kept exhorting. I imagine he would have been overjoyed had every time he taught them something, they got it right then. But it just doesn't work that way. Yes, Alex?
Another thing I realized, like, if you pray for something to God that you really want and it doesn't happen right away, don't get impatient. The best thing to do is continue to seek God's kingdom.
That's right. Put God's kingdom first and let go what may. You know, it may be you won't get what you ask because God knows that's not best for some reason or another. That may be. You know, Moses wanted to go into the promised land. God said, nope, not going. But Moses didn't give up on God. All right, so some good lessons as to how we look at ourselves and how we love ourselves when we study this concept of patience. Let's go to Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18. Now this is a story Jesus told about forgiveness. He gave two scenarios. Here you had a king, verse 23, wanted to settle accounts. And there was a man, verse 24, owed him 10,000 talents. The man, verse 25, did not have the means to repay. Did he want to repay? Indication is he did. Well, why didn't he? He just was unable. He couldn't. That's it. And so the master felt compassion, verse 27, released him and forgave him the debt. Then you had the second scenario, and another guy owed him some money in a much, much smaller amount. And he wanted the man to pay back what he owed, verse 28. The man made the same request that the other fellow made to his master. And instead of that, and notice it says, have patience. And I'll pay you. I don't know if he could pay him or not. But I'll do my best. I'll try. And he was unwilling, threw him in prison until he should pay back what was owed. So they reported it to the Lord, verse 31. You remember the Lord called the first guy in, indicted him because of his lack of mercy, verse 33. Threw him in to the torturers, gave him to the torturers till he should repay all that was owed. And talking about the attitude we should have to our fellow man. So, in both cases, while the person owed may have wanted payment now, what must he recognize in order to be patient with the person who owed him? And the king had it, but the guy he forgave didn't. What is it?
Patient,
but what's he got to recognize?
That he wasn't able.
That he's not able. He just can't. So he goes to the guy who owes him the 100 denarii. He said, pay me now. I can't. Got you by the throat. I'll teach you. And so patience, the idea of patience is throughout here. But patience sometimes involves and demands an awareness that we're limited. We're just limited in ability. They're just things we cannot do. Now, apply that when we get to our next verse, and the next two passages. Let's start first in Romans 12. Let's go to Romans chapter 12. Verse 6 through 8. What attitude towards self do these verses teach we should have? What attitude towards self?
Humility
is a good answer. I guess my question is probably not as good. Okay, and that's a good answer. I can see my question is too vague. I know that's the right answer right here. Okay, and that's going
to
be my application. So you're ahead of me, but you're right. That's right. So to recognize what Wally said, that there's things I can do and there's things I can't do, requires sound judgment. Look at verse 3. There's my problem. I should have put verse 3. I say to everyone among you not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but. Note the not but. But what? To have sound judgment. And sound judgment, good judgment, will recognize that we're at different levels. God has allotted to different men different, what he calls, measures of faith. Now, when you get down a little bit further in the text, in verse 6 through 8, he began to talk about some of these things that men can do by God's grace. Now, it's true that some of these are miraculous gifts, but not all of them. And so, sound judgment simply says, for example, maybe a fellow says, you know what, verse 6, I want to prophesy. I really want to prophesy. Man, I could declare the will of God perfectly if I could prophesy. But I can't. So I'm just quitting. I'm not doing anything. I can't prophesy. I'm just throwing up my hands. I'm not doing anything. That sound judgment? Not hardly. See? If God hadn't given you the gift of prophecy, you can't prophesy. But maybe he's given you the gift of, or the power to serve, verse 7. Or to exhort, verse 8. Or to lead, verse 8. So whatever that is, sound judgment, say, okay, I can do this. And don't continually be impatient with yourself and condemn yourself and worry about the things you cannot do. Remember, patience in that story we just read involved recognition of ability and inability. There's some things people just cannot do. Be patient with yourself. You may not be able to give diligently or liberally. You may not be able to be a leader. Certainly none of us are able to prophesy. So don't demand something of yourself that you just don't have the capacity to do. But that doesn't mean you should ignore your abilities either. So I want to be humble. I don't want to put myself up. No, humility is not putting yourself below where you are. Humility is not exalting yourself above where you are. Not to think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. But you ought to have sound judgment. And so being patient with yourselves involves certainly an awareness of our ability or maybe lack of ability to do certain things. Any comments, thoughts? You know, you talk about preaching. When I was a young preacher, for example, first starting out, I had some books called Hardeman's Tabernacle Sermons. A lot of you have never heard of Hardeman. J.B. Hardeman, I believe, was his initials.
You saying Hardeman?
Hardeman. H-A-R-D-A-M-A-N.
I know
it. You know it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're old enough to know it.
I'm old enough to know everybody.
Okay. Brother Hardeman used to preach to big audiences. He preached in Ryman Auditorium. They'd have 6,000 people there. He was a well-known preacher. Well, here was a book, some books of his sermons. So I was a young preacher, just starting out. I didn't know anything about preaching, but I'd try. I'd get those books, look at his sermons, and I'd try to use his words. Oh, that was a mess. Forget that. I can't preach like Brother Hardeman. Don't try. Don't worry about it. There's a man I love to listen to. He's dead now, but man, I've learned so much from. I can remember as a young man, I would go to hear this man preach. As back in the day when they'd preach an hour. And that's all right with me. Man, I love to hear that guy speak. Sometimes I didn't know what he's talking about, but I love to hear him. The way he could put thoughts together. I wish today I could preach like that guy can't. So what do? You just recognize what you can and can't do. That's all. There's some things you just can't do. And move on. Be patient with yourself. And so this text is talking about using whatever measure of faith that God has provided in the service of the kingdom. And be patient with yourself about that limited, maybe, area of ability that you may have. Look at Matthew 25. Matthew 25. Another very familiar story to us all. We call it the parable of the talents. And so our question on our lesson is, why did each man receive a different number of talents? Talents was a sum of money to be responsible for.
To their ability.
Sir?
To their ability.
Ability, according to their ability. Isn't it interesting that in a story Jesus told about what God expects from men, there's the recognition of this very principle we're talking about tonight. He didn't give 5 talents to the 2-talent man or 2 talents to the 1-talent man. He knew their ability. Now, he expected them to do the best they could with their ability. And that's all God expects. He didn't expect the 2-talent man to gain 5. He didn't expect the 1-talent man to gain 2. And so we have this in verse 14. A man about to go on a journey, he called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his ability. When they're called to account, of course, the 5-talent man is commended for being faithful. Verse 21. Faithful. What does that mean in the text of this story? Means he went to church all the time, right?
Trustworthy.
Trustworthy. He's trustworthy. He could trust him to do the best he could. That's all that the master expected. And the same thing in verse 23. Good and faithful slave. You were faithful over a few things. So you get down to the one talent man. He makes this excuse. That's all it is. You know, he said, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. Wow. Buddy, that is a hard guy. What kind of fellow would expect fruit where he sowed no seed? Nobody. That's the nature of excuses. They don't make sense. And so, it's just an excuse is what it is. And if he thought he was a hard man, you know, if you have a job and you're afraid of losing it, and you need it very badly, and you know your boss is very demanding, what are you going to do?
Work harder.
Work harder. That's right. You say, I'll quit. Well, this guy couldn't quit. It's not an option. So,
he doesn't buy you anything anyway.
Sir?
He does not buy you anything.
That's right. That's right.
Same thing's going to happen somewhere else.
That's right. And so, verse 26, the master said to him, you wicked fornicator. Right? No. You wicked thief.
Lazy.
Lazy slave. You're lazy. Laziness in the Bible is not doing anything. Laziness in the Bible is not doing the thing that we don't want to do or we deem unpleasant. So you wicked, lazy slave. So what kind of man are you or me? My five talent, two talent, one talent? Look. If you're a one-talent man, okay. Be patient with yourself. There's no use trying to attain the five-talent status. The Lord doesn't expect it of you. Just do the best you can with what you got. That's what God expects of us. Someone has said that we need to learn to laugh at ourselves. I really like that statement. Because what that implies is that we have a sense of humility. We just mess up sometimes. We lack ability sometimes. You know, you folks have been patient listening to me preach for all these years. I say the wrong names. I give the wrong books. But you know what? I wished I got it right every time. But I go home and sleep. I don't worry about it. That's just the way it is, and y'all are very patient with me. I might as well be patient with myself instead of fretting over it. And so, you go back up to this Romans 12 passage, and it applies to the verses above, you know, this man that couldn't pay, to the verse below, Matthew 25, the man that two talents, it just is judged according to what he's able to do. So Romans 12 says, recognize, use good judgment about yourself. You got to judge yourself. What am I able to do? Do that. Maybe you can't preach. Maybe if you're a man, you can't serve as an elder. Who knows? But do what you can do and rejoice in the Lord. Where is that? Philippians. That's right. Talked about that Sunday night, didn't we? And evidently, y'all are going to hear more about Philippians. So I asked Alex to preach when I'm gone in September, and he said he's going to preach on Philippians. What? God's book of mental health?
God's mental health manual.
God's mental health manual. I'll be looking forward to hearing the lesson. So, any comments or questions?
There's one thing that strikes me about this particular section. That is the, when you think about long suffering toward others, what gets in our way sometimes is our pride, our unwillingness to do that. Same thing impacts self. You know, our pride can get in the way of our own self-patience. We might have the ability to do something, but we can have let pride get in the way where we do stupid things trying to do what we really have no business doing.
Everybody hear that in the back? Now you see, I got to repeat it again. But it's an excellent comment. He said, one of the things that sometimes gets in the way with being long-suffering with others is pride. The same thing is true with ourselves. And instead of just recognizing our limitations, we get lifted up with pride. I didn't say it as good as he did, but he didn't speak up, so I have to phrase it. So, see, I'm patient with Wally because he just says he can't speak up. So there we are. See, all right. So, but that's excellent comment. And Wally's comment is something we've talked about. As the older we get, we realize maybe because we look in the mirror, so many things that are wrong with us is rooted in pride. It's one of those under the surface things that accounts for so much that we are not proud of, ashamed of. All right, thank you for your good comments tonight. And the Lord willing, Sunday we'll talk about teach yourself. Lessons are on the back if you'd like to get a copy. Those of you who want all the lessons, there's about three more up here on the front pew. I'm going to put another set out tonight, but if you want them, they're up on the front pew.